First speaker, Bob.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bob Lemke. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Bob. My sobriety date is the 13th of January, 1964, which means I'm coming up on 44 years.
All right.
This is an odd feeling for me today. This is the first time in all my years in AA that I'm the new kid on the block. And the first time that my sponsor and I sit on the same panel. Right. That's really something. And so I'm eternally grateful. Is he telling a story? While I was sitting there, this guy's at home in bed at night, you know, knock on the door. He gets out of bed, goes downstairs, opens the door. Here's some drunk standing there, weaving back and forth. He said, "I need a Porsche." He says, "It's 3 o'clock in the morning, go to hell." Slammed the door. Went back up, crawled in bed. His wife says, "Who is that?" He says, "Some drunk, wanted a push." She says, "You aren't going to help him?" "No, it's 3 o'clock in the morning." She says, "Remember last week when some guy came along and helped you push your car when its battery was dead?" He says, "Oh, all right." And he got his bathrobe on, went down, opened up the door, and he couldn't see the guy. He hollered, "Hey, Joe, where are you?" He says, "Over here." "Over where?" He said, "On the swing." Makes sense to me. I'm what this book says, a real alcoholic. In fact, I'm one of them bar drinking drunks. Are any bar drinkers here today? Thank God. I mean, I don't know where the rest of you did your thing, but if you didn't get some bar time in, you missed a lot of fun. I loved everything about those joints, you know. I love everything that goes on in there. I like the smell in there. I like them stools you can spin around on. I like the mirrors they got in those places, you know? All right. Jim and I could go out here tomorrow on the main boulevard, open up a joint here in, what's the name of this town?
Santa Clarita.
Really sharp, you know. We could open up a joint. Without a mere fact of life, we'd go broke in 2 weeks. As that mirror in the bar is not there for social drinkers. Bars cannot survive on social drinkers. You bar drinkers know what I'm talking about. And they come in there and have a couple drinky poos, and then they start saying weird off the wall kind of crap, like, "Ooh, I'm getting dizzy. I'm going home." I mean, we stay there all day, and we have to have something to entertain ourselves, and it's usually our own image, thus the mirror. Yeah, we sit there all day staring in the mirror, you know, figuring things out. I love them jukeboxes they have in places, you know, the ones that play Born to Lose all day. You remember that? That's one of the greatest drinking songs there is, you know. And so I spent a lot of time in bars. And then I had this other problem that really caused me no end of problems. Besides being an alcoholic, I had this thing. It's called big shot-itis. And I don't know about any of you, but I'm a big shot-itis in the bar. You know, give them all a drink, bartender. Big shot, big shot. Or do it again, you know. Pretty soon the whole paycheck's gone. And I'm in deep doo-doo. And I call my brother, and he's one of those social drinkers, you know. And I call him, and he lives in San Francisco, and I tell him I had this little financial problem here, if he'd be so kind to send me some money. And he would send me money. And 2 weeks later, he would call and say, "I heard you're drinking again." I could have said, you know, "What else is new?" But I would say, "Well, I'm trying, you know. I'm trying." And then I think, how the hell does he know that? You know, he lives in San Francisco. I live in Glendale. How the hell does he know I'm drinking? But I got that figured out. I have a quick study, you know. It's my mother. She lives in Wisconsin, 2,000 miles away, and she can smell whiskey on me 2,000 miles away. And she'd call him up and say, Bob's drinking again. Yeah. Then he'd call weeks later and he'd ask me this question that all non-alcoholics talk to alcoholics about. He actually had the nerve to say this. He would say, why don't you just quit? And you understand that? I couldn't. I thought, there's something wrong with this guy, you know? I couldn't explain to him then, and I still can't today, that I got to have a drink now, right now, or I'm going to flip around the room, you know. And he don't understand that. Still doesn't today. And so I don't know how much time we got here. Are you going to tell us?
You going for a little bit, yeah.
Okay. So I
I'm the embryo. I can't tell anybody anything.
But I want to, before I forget, I want to thank Mike for asking me to be on this panel and Jim. And we put our heads together and almost came up with something else, you know. And I've been around long enough to remember these people. These were the people that were here before when I came here. And God Almighty. There were some that they're all, a lot of them are gone. And but there were people there that really cared whether I lived or died. And I think that's what we have to offer the sick alcoholic. We can offer him help and that he don't have to die drunk. Because I knew the next time I go out there, I'm going to die drunk. My last drunk, I was living in abandoned cars, drinking rot gut wine, and the abandoned car was mine, you know. I never knew this until I got sober, you know. Abandoned cars, you know, the tires were flat, the battery's dead, it's out of gas. But the big thing is it was 6 months behind in payments. Then legally, it's an abandoned car. Once you don't make the payments for 6 months, it's an abandoned car. I didn't know that legally. And so I'm living in abandoned cars. My car. That scared me. And there was four of us in there. And I don't know, one morning, the guy Pete. Pete was one of those smart guys you meet in bars. You know, you bar drinkers know what I'm talking about. That's that guy or gal who sits down there at the end of the bar and has the answer to every living subject in the world. And that was Pete. I mean, if you had marital problems and I had marital problems, he had the answers. If you had legal problems, he had the answers. If you had medical problems, he had the answers. If you had engineering problems, he had the answers. I thought he was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I thought, how can one guy know so much about so many things? And this morning we all came to and Pete didn't. And he had swallowed his tongue in an alcoholic convulsion that night. Never saw that before in my life. And a little voice went off in my head that night and it said, Bob, you're next. And it scared the living with Jesus out of me. Scared the living with Jesus out of me. I got to be living in abandoned cars as a result of a lot of other drinking before me. You know, I'm an ex-cop, and they took that badge and gun away from me a long time ago as a result of another drunken fracas, you know? Bunch of cops and our wives having a party, and I'm in the kitchen where all the booze is. And she comes in the kitchen and says, we're leaving. And I said, we just got here. At least it seemed like that to me. And she looked at me with them cold Al-Anon eyes and says, we're leaving. And I don't know to this day how she got the keys. Because it's like everybody else here. It's my car, I drive, right? And she had the keys and we left. And on the way home, she started bad-mouthing me. And this whole thing is in the book. Talks about this in the book. She was It says that you and I, who are real alcoholics, go through life with blinders on us like they put on horses, and we don't see anything that way, and we don't see anything that way. It's our way or no way. We're very selfish individuals. And she's yakking away and telling me these god-awful truths I don't want to hear, and I shut it all off because we're born with a switch, you know. We're the only people in the world with a switch. And when people are telling us these god-awful truths we don't want to hear, we just push the switch. And it don't even hit the eardrum. It just chew right over the top. And we got in the house and she wouldn't shut up. Made sense to me, huh? And I said, I reached for the only thing I know would shut her up, a 38. I said, woman, I've heard all I'm ever going to hear from you about my drinking. I'll blow your damn brains out. And she took off like a deer. Chew! Out the front door of that house, 6 blocks down the street to the only place she knew she could get help, right? The sheriff's office that I work at. And I'd have got her, too, if she'd just slowed down. And you'd have a different speaker here today, too. I'd probably be up there walking the walk and talking the talk. Thank God. Thank God. There has to be a God, because I left to my own devices, I'd have pulled the trigger. And I came out of that blackout standing in the middle of the sheriff's office at 3 o'clock in the morning with a 38 in my hand, going to kill somebody. And all the guys are standing around the squad room, and they're all looking at me kind of funny. You know how your family, friends, loved ones, fellow workers look at you when you're drunk and a skunk? They kind of look down their nose at you like you're some kind of second-class citizen or something. I can't even describe it. But I'll tell you what, if any of you don't know what I'm talking about right this second, you do not belong here. Those people near and dear to us really look at us funny when we're drunk and a skunk. And they're all looking at me kind of funny. And then the boss, the elected sheriff of that county, come walking in his squad room. And he looked at those guys coming off the late shift talking about all the crap that happened last night. And then he looked at me. And he and I are like this, really thick. And he and my dad are, my dad's a cop. And they're buddies. And that whole law enforcement deal is a buddy-buddy system. And he looked at me, and I know he had a heck of a time with it. And he held out his hand and says, Bob, hand it over, the badge and the gun. And he took it all away. Yeah, took away that badge, that gun, and that uniform, and had to face that world bare naked. It's too much for a normal person, much less a drunk like me. So at the age of 31, I did the most adult, mature thing I could think of. I ran away from home. If there's any runners here tonight, I want to talk to you outside after the meeting. But I'll tell you what, no matter where I go in this country, because these rooms are full of runners, do you know that? Running to something, running from something. And every runner who's ever come to Alcoholics Anonymous, including me, we all forgot one thing, and we all forgot the same identical thing. And that is, no matter where you're running to or running from, you forgot it, I forgot it. I had to bring me along, and you had to bring you along. And you is the problem, and me is the problem. And you can't make this thing alone, and I can't make this thing alone. But together we can make it. And that's the miracle it talks about in our book. One drunk talking to another, and it works. Works to the tune of over 3 million sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's good enough for me, man. That's good enough for me. So I am eternally grateful for my time in this outfit and some of the people I've come to know in this outfit. And, so, and you know what? Over the years, in all my travels, some of the finest people I've ever met in my life all turned out to be sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Isn't that a kick? All turned out to be sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a bunch of them here today. And I'm twice blessed, you know? And I can't tell you just how much it all means to me. But there's always a little thing I have to throw in here about that woman that put up with that crap, got chased by a drunk cop. And the 23rd of November 2001, she was diagnosed with cancer. melanoma cancer. And she was gone in 30 days. On the 23rd of December, God came and took her from me. And 3 weeks short of 54 years married. So she put up with a lot of crap. And my life has changed. My life has entirely changed. And that day, the kids were taking all the calls, and I don't know how the people found out, but from all over this continent, they started calling. I don't know how they found out. And before I left today, one of the guys from Canada, Crandall, you here? Yeah, one of the guys from Canada called me today just to say, how are you, Bob? Just checking on you. I don't know of another outfit in the world that people do that. They really care whether you make this thing or not. But for all you guys, all you macho guys, I want to tell you something that I entirely missed in all the years we were married. And now I know it. It's another fact of life that women, and only women, can make a house a home. Men cannot do that. So today I live in a house again, and it's the pits. It's the living pits. And so I am eternally grateful. But there's a guy sitting here today who kind of saved my can again. And he introduced me to some gal. And things are looking up. I thought it was all over. But it ain't. And so I'm eternally grateful for people doing little favors like that, you know. He didn't have to do that, you know. He didn't have to do that. But he did. And so everything's working out fine. And so I really, for an old goat like me, I think there's little hope left. There might be silver on the top, but there's a little fire in the hearth yet. Joe will talk about that too. And so I guess you heard enough about me. I am eternally grateful just to be a part of this thing, you know. You people saved my life, and so I really owe you a lot. I'm really indebted to the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.